Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Welcome to Spark. I am joined today by my co-host, Zora.
Hi everyone. Hi Tanish.
On our quest to meet people who work with and do research on AI, we met Silvia Quarteroni and Andrea Rizzoli and heard about how AI can help dealing with the consequences of climate change and what societal challenges are posed by the advent of AI. So we encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes if you're interested. For this episode, Zora talked with members of the Swiss Young Academy who are working with topics related to AI.
Today, you'll get to hear from Pamela Delgado, a researcher on systems for AI and an assistant professor at the Applied Sciences University, HESO in Wallis, and Emmanuel Senft, a researcher working at the IDEAP in Martigny, focusing on human-robot interactions. I met the two of them online, and they shared with me their perspectives as early career researchers and how students can get into the field. Additionally, we talked about how AI tools change the way we study, where Pamela provided interesting insights from her own teaching experience. Well, let's start with some introductions. So, Pamela Delgado, you are an assistant professor at the HESO, and your research focus is on systems for AI. Can you explain to us what you are working on currently?
Yes, definitely. Thank you for having me. Indeed, I work at the intersection between two fields, between a field that's called computer systems and artificial intelligence. So specifically, deep learning, training and serving, and all of these algorithms and tools that are related to AI, they really need a lot of powerful compute resources. So my research focuses on different aspects of how to make a better use, a more efficient use of these resources, which are also very expensive and consume a lot of energy.
Emmanuel Senft, you are a research scientist at the IDEAP Research Institute. Your research is centered around human-robot interaction. Can you briefly tell us what your research is about?
For sure. So first, thanks a lot for having me. I'm working on robotics and AI, but mostly in a more human-centered way. So one of the applications I'm very interested to look into is assistive robotics, like more specifically how robots can be helping people with disabilities, older adults, or be used in education. So in all these cases, what we're doing is basically we're developing technologies with end users to see how we can have robots helping people in different domains.
Do you have a concrete example of such an application?
Yeah, actually, for sure. Right now, I'm working with a company in Zurich. So they are creating a robot that is currently deployed in elder care institutions. And what I really want to see is how we can improve the capabilities of this robot, mostly looking on the social capabilities, because these robots are living basically in the same place where all the adults are living. And we have these artificial robots moving around. And I want to see how we can have these robots being well accepted and like finding a proper way for them to interact in these places where people are living their life.
What was maybe the starting point of your passion for AI and research in the field?
Yes, actually, the starting point for me, I started pretty young. Even as a kid, I was often asking my parents for robots for Christmas. And most of the time, I couldn't get them because they were too expensive. But I had this passion, I don't know where it came from, for robots. And then at some point, I think I was like 10, 12 maybe, I read an article in a magazine talking about science for young people, talking about how robots could invent their own language. And I thought that was amazing. And I said, okay, I want to do a research in robotics. And so then I went to EPFL to do microengineering. And then by somewhat accident, I ended up in the UK doing my PhD in human-robot interaction. I didn't think about human-robot interaction before, but now that's what I do and I really like it. I think it's very rich because we have both sides, we have the technical side of the robot and the human side with the human.
Yeah, for me, I think also when I was a kid, I had a passion for, in general, logic. And I remember that I learned this game that was called I think Turtle or Tortoise or something like that, but it was actually programming. I didn't know it yet then, but I was some sort of programming this little dot that will draw things in a geometrical way. And I really liked the automation side of it. How can you make the machine do things for you? And so I really enjoyed. And during high school, I did some more programming, and I was always more advanced than the rest of the class because it was my curiosity and passion about it. Then it came naturally that I had to do some computer science when I was doing the bachelor. And then my master at EPFL with this in mind, programming languages. And then I changed for the PhD. I changed for systems where you have a lot of data. You have the cloud computing where you have all the services that people use day to day that have rooms full of tens of thousands of servers. And how can you make them act as if it is just one computer? So that was very interesting to me because user doesn't really know when you do a search in a search engine, you don't really know where this search is actually, this information is actually traveling through the world and it's going, where is it going? What kind of data is, where is this data crunched? So I started then learning that, oh, you have tens of thousands of machines to do this. You have so much data that keeps growing and it's that trend won't stop. So how can you make better use of this? How can you not waste these resources? Then I was curious about what are these data science. So I spent 4 years at the SDSC, at the Swiss Data Science Center, learning about what is data science is and what kind of tools and platforms the data science needs. And then I also have a passion for teaching. So I continue with the University of Applied Sciences, exploring this fusion of both fields of systems and AI.
So both of you are members of the SYA, the Swiss Young Academy. And we are here to discuss the evolution of AI and its applications, as well as AI research from the perspective of early career researchers. So AI has become very popular in the last few years, even though it's been around for much longer. Why is that?
So basically with AIs, so we're like multiple waves of AI since its inception, like over 50 years ago, I believe. And so we got like a hype wave where people think, oh, we can do everything with AI. And then a few years later, we realized actually it cannot do everything. So we have what we called AI winters. And so it means like for 5, 10, 15 years, we won't hear much about AI. You might have a few people keep working on it, but like that's about it. And then, oh, we found a new way to use it. So right now we are in a sum of AIs that I would say started for me around 10, 15 years ago with something that is called deep learning. And basically it was a combination of a wide source of compute, so like a power to do calculation and a large data set, which allowed us to have big progresses of AI in a lot of different domains. And a few years ago, we had all of this with large language models, typically ChatGPT and other. But the big difference is that before, AI tools were actually used by people without really knowing it. Because when you are on YouTube or any social media, you have suggestion made by algorithm. And so you are actually using AI without knowing it. You are training AI without knowing it. But now with tools like ChatGPT that have been really released to the wide public, people realize that they can be, basically can use AI in a more intentional way. And so that's why everybody is talking about it, in my opinion.
Yes, I think you bring up very good points. When I heard this question, two things that came to mind were huge amount of data and huge amount of resources. Because even if some methods were already there, none of this would have been possible without having the right data and the right resources. And I think that made it possible to also reach a different public. As Emmanuel said, it's more democratized, sort of say. It's now a big part of the society.
So, Pamela, you're also teaching as an assistant professor. How do you think new generations use this new tools for learning?
Yes, thank you. That's a very good question. I've seen students using AI in a variety of ways. It ranges from simple querying, just as we would do a search engine, to really try to solve some exercises given either programming or doing some math. But it's worth noting that some of the way that these tools are used, some of these ways are effective, some of these are not. Some of them are an aid for learning, while some actually give the impression, the false impression, that you are learning something when you are really not. So I see these two sides.
So how can these tools enhance our learning experience rather than just do the work for us?
That's something I think ultimately the responsibility lies on the person, young or less young, who is using the tools. So I think now it's more important than ever to be critical and to have this self-reflection to understand whether we are really using the tools as aids and effectively, or we are sometimes losing our time or thinking that we understood something when we really didn't.
We used to say, don't trust everything that you can see on the internet. And I would say that you have to be 10 or 100 times more careful with large language models, because you have this risk of hallucination, which might not be the best name, but that's what people use. We'll just stick with it, where the model might just create something that sounds reasonable, but is just factually wrong. And so I think the problem is not about using these technologies. It's often about over-trusting them and relying on them for tasks that are not appropriate. And so, for example, you could use them to brainstorm some ideas, but don't take what the model is saying as the real truth. It's not because it sounds right that it is right.
So what do you think is the principal impact of AI in your personal work?
I would say there are like two aspects, because part of my work involved, I don't know if I can say AI research, but at least I'm a consumer of AI technologies and partially a developer of AI in my own research. So like here, I would be using whatever tools are available, typically to improve ways we can interact with my robot. So it could be about like detecting people, understanding people better when they're speaking, dealing with multiple language, or knowing what bot should be replying or what bot should be doing. So in all of this, I would be using AI directly in, let's say, the technical aspect of my research. AI has lots of other opportunities to be used in research, regardless of the discipline. And I think that's something I think is very important to mention here. AI is relevant for people who are not researching AI, and these people should be learning how to use it and like what are the limitations. So for example, you can use AI to brainstorm ideas. You can use AI to know which papers, like in scientific research, to look at. You can use AI to help you to write some aspects, because maybe you wrote a paragraph, but like your style is not very fluent, not very clean, because you're not a native speaker. And then you can use AI to clean it. But then you have to be very, very careful when you start using AI to generate new things, because that's where you can have big issues. So I would say, yeah, AI is changing a lot the way we do research, and not only for AI researchers.
Yes, if I may add, for me, I also have these two aspects, doing research with AI or for AI, or using AI for research. And using AI for research sometimes is really not evident, because you really have to be careful. You have to, nowadays, the field of AI is exploding in research. You really have so many articles coming down every day, and you really cannot keep up with it. And then doing research for AI, it's really interesting for me, because it brings up new challenges. And wherever there are challenges, it seems that there is something to solve and something interesting as well that impacts the society in a way. And so that is really exciting for me to work on. And teaching as well, I must say, the availability of AI tools has changed the way I teach, the way I help my students as well. I'd also question myself and my colleagues, how can we integrate AI tools in teaching? And this is not evident, because sometimes the AI really gives the right answer, but students don't really do the process of understanding and reaching to the answer by themselves. So this is something that shouldn't be overlooked.
This is a big push in most of the universities today in Switzerland. So this is big reflection on how can we use AI properly for our students, like both like teaching them how to use AI, but also using AI method within the curriculum to be able to understand some concept better, to be able to have new personalized exercises or other aspect. So like things are moving. Lots of people are looking into it, and I think it's a very exciting time.
So we've talked a lot about the possibilities and potential of AI applications. Maybe what are some of the challenges we have to face in the future of AI?
And I think that's a very important question, because as researchers, we tend to be very inspired by the positive aspects, but there are also some challenges that we need to consider when we are doing our research. And one of the points, if we again like keep this idea of like having some robotic system that could be like a robotic pet or like a robotic doll at home that you can talk to, what would happen is that after a while, people create some bonds with these robotic systems, much more than with a disembodied, like a virtual agent, because like the presence in the physical world is very important. And it means that after a while, the system can also start to have influence on people. And one of the challenges that actually I'm very interested to see how we can look deeper into it and like how we can prevent it is the risks of manipulation. Because if you trust a robotic agent, and this robotic agent might have some nefarious intents for whatever reason, it means that they could progressively infuse people with more radical ideas, or like make them do decisions that are not the best that are possible for them. Like we have seen examples of chatbots encouraging people to self-harm. And in this kind of case, we want to find the right way to have the positive aspects of AI, but also to protect people from the negative aspect of AI. So that's something where I think we need to do a lot of research there, and also we need to work more with the political aspect, like the legal framework, to be sure that what we are developing is in the end having a positive impact.
If I may continue with this conversation, one thing that I have seen with younger generations in general is that they tend to be less worried about sharing data. And data is very important, the data privacy, what kind of data you're sharing. Sometimes people are really not aware of what few they can do. So I think it's really important also to see where all this is going within a legal framework, of course, but also I'm curious to see how more other solutions that allow for better data privacy and security come to life.
And another impact also is all the environmental impact. So like Pamela was touching upon it before. Currently, data centers to store data and to process data have a massive footprint on the environment. Could be through electric consumption, could be through land use, could be through water, could be through minerals being extracted. And all of the like life cycle of these data centers is actually something very important to consider. So yes, like AI is touching lots of different aspects of society that we need to take into account.
So let's move on to some questions about your relations with younger researchers. Maybe what are the challenges faced by young researchers or early career researchers, and also their potential in the field?
I think the use of technologies and the ease of use of these technologies, it's changing over generations. And I see it that students and younger generations are becoming native AI users, and that really changes things. And I see that there is a potential. Just like my generation is very proficient in making effective search engine queries, I think the generation following will become very proficient and in making hopefully very effective use of AI. I also see a danger though. Sometimes there is not enough experience to judge some things. And so I think generations have to work together to bring the best of both worlds.
I think one of the main points is that everybody is impacted by AI regardless of their field. And different fields can bring very different perspectives on AI use potential and impacts. So I think it's interesting to consider bringing notions from humanities, social sciences, or like seeing how AI can be helping other sciences also to have more like multidisciplinary vision on AI. I think really like the message I would like to send today, if I only send one, is that AI should not be only considered for AI researchers or like AI engineers. It should be a topic that's a wider population and like different disciplines taking upon them to understand more and to have their say.
Now, for curious young students who are looking to work in these fields, what do you think are the skills most necessary to succeed?
I would say for me the first one would be curiosity. Like you have to want to learn more, to want to discover more. But like that's something I love about my work is every day I'm talking with new people. I can be talking to someone doing social science, I can be talking to someone doing more like technical research. I can be talking to a student, high school student, to a university student, to a professor who's been there for 20 years. And trying to keep an open mind. I think open mind and curiosity would be like the two main points. And then you do need a bit of abnegation, because there would be some highs and lows, and some parts can be a bit longer than what you would like. I think the curiosity, a bit of autonomy, would get you much further along the path than, in a way, just good grades. And I think it's really valid for AI research, but also other research. Every time I speak about my research, I'm very excited because there are so many things I want to learn more about. And I know I will never be able to learn everything, but that keeps me going forward because just like the way to discover, to talk with smart people, to learn new things, to think about like how what you are doing could have an impact in the world later. So like I think you have to get a bit of this idealism also. That can be helpful.
Yes, for me, curiosity definitely should be in the formula. But also I would add hard work, because if you don't pursue and you are not willing to be persistent on trying to follow that curiosity, then it will just end up in nothing. So for me, this persistency and this willingness to work, it's also key for being in the field. And also one thing that I really like and really enjoyed, apart from the challenges and the things that you want to solve, is that it's constantly evolving. It's never boring. You don't learn one thing and it will be like that for like 20 years. You have to be able to renew your own knowledge and re-question yourself. That's, for me, it's something very important to be able to do questions and to able to do the right questions.
What do you think are possible research fields that will emerge in the future?
One thing I would like to see is more interdisciplinary research, where researchers are not just doing their own research in a silo, but really interdisciplinary, because that's when things get even more interesting, more challenging, but more interesting.
Like I think, like even if both Pamela and I are doing mostly computer science, I would say it's like a massive space for social sciences and the way we can work with researchers from social sciences. And then you would create new fields. Like what I'm doing, human-robot interaction, was not even existing 30 years ago. And then some people started to do it, and then you started to get a community, and then you have a new field. And then what I would expect is some fields will get deeper and deeper in a sense that like algorithmic of AI models might become more and more complex in a way, more and more narrow, but then also some other fields will be actually wider across disciplines. And then sometimes by going wider across disciplines, and when you change your perspective and bring other disciplines together, then you can bring some new change of paradigms that would have a massive impact in the research of like fields that seem to be narrow, I think, here.
So Pamela Delgado and Emmanuel Senth, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you much for having us.
Thank you.
So that was Pamela Delgado, a researcher and professor at the University of Applied Sciences, HESO, and Emmanuel Senft, a researcher at IDIAP.
So now let's wrap up all the interesting talks we've had in these last episodes. For me, what really inspired me in today's talk is the focus on including the human aspect of AI. In the future, maybe sooner than we expect, we could live and work side by side with AI tools. And this includes all of us, not just researchers in the AI domain.
This also connects to what Andrea Rizzoli and Silvia Quarteroni mentioned in the last two episodes. AI will not replace humans or human intelligence, but in many cases it will support human labor and can help us become more efficient in our work.
Exactly. Personally, I think that AI could, if done right, help us humans to focus on the essential tasks only we can do, which is being conscious and emotional creatures who take care of the communities and environment around them.
That's why I also think it is crucial for all of us, especially young people, just starting with their studies, to learn how to interact with and use AI applications. In my opinion, when students use AI for problem solving, it creates a false sense of learning in their minds. People should realize the importance of critical thinking when engaging with AI-generated content. Universities and other institutions are also exploring how to integrate AI effectively into curriculums.
So now we've talked a lot about how students use AI tools. So let's talk a little bit more about what are the skills needed to get into AI research.
Like Andrea mentioned in my interview with him, programming is not necessarily a skill you need to get into AI, but you should understand the logic and the fundamentals behind it to effectively understand how an AI works and how you interact with it.
Another thing that has been mentioned both today and in the first interview of the series is the importance of curiosity in order to get into this field. I also really agree with Pamela when she added that succeeding also demands a lot of hard work. So I find it fascinating to see all these diverse backgrounds from which people can get involved with AI. And I'm really excited to see what new fields are gonna emerge in the future.
Same, we are already seeing examples of radically new art being generated through AI, or people being assisted in their research for cancer treatments through AI. Therefore, AI is the catalyst that's needed to create these new industries. Instead of alienating it, we should be embracing it with open arms.
In particular, the development of new interdisciplinary approaches to these challenges is something I am looking forward to seeing in the future.
We should also not forget the challenges associated with the field of AI, particularly the problem with AI bias, AI resource consumption, and a lack of regulations.
So there are still many open questions about the future of AI. And I think we will see whether AI will be able to fulfill all the promises made and solve its challenges.
That's it for the series on AI. However, AI is connected to our other series on social media, information, and its impact on democracy.
But first, we'll have a summer break, and we will continue with that series in August. I hope you join us again. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Spark. Stories from advocates for global change. A podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel, Tanish Shingi, and Zora Althaus. Produced by the Podcast Schmiede.